Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Chaf Dalet Amud Bet. The Gemara here is discussing the last line of the Mishnah, but in truth, we'll see in a second, it's discussing the authorship of the entire Mishnah. The end of the Mishnah said, Yalda tumtum androginus, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, ain't kedusha chal aleihen, that the kedusha does not devolve upon them, and Amai, ain't kedusha chal aleihen. What is the reason that the kedusha does not devolve upon the tumtum and androginus? Kasava, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Shimon Gamliel must believe, Vladot kodushim, Rabiatan ein kedushin, that the bladot of kodeshim only attain their kedusha once they are born, once they come to fruition. The isakadat chamei iman ein kedushin. If you think that they already take on their kedusha from the time that they are conceived, amay ein kedusha chalalehen. Because if that's the case, then why isn't the kedusha work over here? Tafsetinu kedusha diemayu, because their mother's kedusha could have devolved upon them. You see from this that Vladei Kodeshin only take on their Kedusha when they come into existence, once they are born. The way that Rashi explains this is that if you have a choice as to how the Kedusha devolves, it either can be B'Haviatan, which is when the animal is born. That's when the Kedusha happens. If that's the case, then the animal is already developed into a Tumtum and Androgynous. That if the animal is already developed into a Tumtum and Androgynous before the Kedusha comes, and therefore it's already a Baal Mum before the Kedusha ever happens, and therefore there's no Kedusha over here. On the other hand, if you say that it is Bimei Iman, Rashi says that as it develops, the Kedusha develops with it. So it attains Kedusha piece by piece by piece. By the time it comes to Tumtum and Androgynous, the animal is already Kadosh because it's taken that Kedusha from its mother. So for that reason, it must be that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that Vladot Kodoshim Abiyatan ain't Kodoshim, because he says in the Mishnah that a Tumtum and Androgynous ain't Kedusha Chalalehen. And that can only be true if it happens Bezman Havaya, because then the Tumtum and Androgynous preceded it. On the other hand, if it's the other way around, that it's Bimei Iman, then the Kedusha would have developed slowly with the animal, and that developed Kedusha would then only afterwards be subject to Tumtum and Androgynous, not beforehand. The Rabbeinu Gershom has a slightly different formulation of this. He says, he says that at the time that they're born, they're already recognizable as a Tumtum Androgynous, as opposed to Bimei Iman, where they're not recognizable as a Tumtum Androgynous, and therefore the Kedusha would devolve upon them. Now, there are two things to say about this. Number one is that this is only dealing with the situation in which the animal was Kadosh, and then afterwards this animal developed inside of it, Nitabra. It became pregnant, and then it had the other animal inside of it. What's the din? Is it Bimei Iman? Or is it B'Haviatan Hein Kedoshin? What about the case where you're actually Magdish the animal and it's pregnant at that time with a Tumtum and Androgynous? We say there that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel also believes there that the Kedusha does not devolve upon the Tumtum Androgynous. The only question is as to why that is. There are those Rishonim who suggest that the reason for that is because we say that it's a Birya Bifne Atzma. It's its own entity. It's not a Zachar. It's not an Ekeva. And therefore the Kedusha cannot devolve upon them. And that's why, when the animal's pregnant and you're Makdish, the mother, that the Ubar does not take on any Kedusha at that time, because it's a Birya Bifnei Atzma, it's not a Zechar, not a Nekeva. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot on the previous Amud is a very large Tosafot, discuss what they think the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is, and they believe that the reason that it doesn't work is because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says when a person says he wants to be Makdish something, he's Makdish a Zechar Vadai or Nekeva Vadait. That's what he has in mind. He has in mind to have the animals that are ra'ui the mizbeach be kadosh. And that's only a zachar badai or a nekeva badait, not a case of drugonos and tumtum. And that's why they're not kadoshim. When he's makdish them and they are in utero at that time, there's already an ubar there. That is a machloket arishonim. It really revolves around the gemara that we learned in. Korot said that everybody agrees that a tumtum is a safek and not a birya bifnei atzma. And so based on that gemara in Bechorot, they said that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position here must be that it is because of Zachar Vadai and Nekeva Vadait, meaning that he was only Mifaresh Zachar and Nekeva, or he was Mitkavein for something that's Ra'oi the Mizbeach, and Tumtum Androgynous do not qualify for that. The other thing to note is Rashi says this, and Tosafot says a similar thing, Ein Kedusha Chalalehem Afilu Ametziata Namikoi, that you have to say this is true not only in the last statement of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you also have to say it in the middle section as well. For instance, when the mother is Kadosh, that the Bladot Kodoshim don't follow the mother, only way that could be true is if it was that the Bladot only became Kadosh B'Haviatan. But if they became Kadosh B'Me'iman, then there'd be no way to do such a thing. There'd be no way to separate away the Ubar's Kedusha from the mother's Kedusha, because automatically, as soon as the animal is conceived, it would take on the Kedusha of the mother, and you have no way to intervene or change the Kedusha of the Ubar. So not only is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel saying this in the Seifa, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion is actually throughout the Mishnah, that you have to say B'havi'atanya hey, and that's the explanation of the Mishnah. We have another Tana who actually believes that the Vladot are Kadosh from the time of conception, not from the time of birth. That's based on the Pasuk, then Perach of Zayin, Pasuk of Vav, Ach v'chor sheyivukar l'Hashem, b'behema, lo yadish ishoto, imshor imseh l'Hashemu. That's speaking about a b'chor behema tehora. And now the Breita goes and breaks down that Pasuk. It starts out with the assumption with Ilu Ne'amar. The Pasuk says, Ach b'chor sheyivukar l'Hashem, b'behema, lo yadish ishoto. So Ilu Ne'amar b'chor, lo yadish, had it just written, B'chor Hashem Yukar Lo Yagdish, had just written that, and it didn't write Ishoto, and it didn't write B'behema, I demer B'chor Lo Yagdish Hepteshot, that a B'chor Adam, somebody who was a B'chor Adam, wouldn't have the right to be Makdish things to Hektesh. Tama Lomar, so then we move on and say, well, there's another word, Oto. Midukamar Oto, Rashi says, A B'chor B'hema Anami. Oto Ad Iata Makdish, Ava Makdish, Adam B'chor Hekteshot. So what we learn from that is that a B'chor Adam cannot be makdish a bechor, but he can be makdish other types of hekdesh. Va'adayin ani omer, hu lo yakdish, ave yakdishu acheri. So the only person who's precluded from making the bechor into other types of hekdesh is a bechor adam. But implied from that is that somebody else who was not a bechor adam would have the right then to be makdish the bechor. So you're going through different stages. The first stage is that bechor adam doesn't have any right to be makdish. Where it says, no, that's not right because it says, oto. Oto means the animal, the b'chor, that we're speaking about, b'chor be'ema. If that's the case, then you would have thought a b'chor adam can't be makdish a b'chor be'ema, but he can be makdish other hekdeshot. And also, someone who's not a b'chor adam would have the right then to be makdish a b'chor. So tam alomar b'be'ema. So now I add in another word, b'be'ema. So these are the words of the pasuk. We started out with the pasuk of just being a b'chor asher yivukar l'ashem lo yakdish. And then we added in Bibhema and Ish Oto. Bibhema sakti. So then I said that we're speaking about the Bibhema, and that's it. So it's not about the person, it's about the animal. And the animal is a Bechor. You can't change the Kedusha of a Bechor. Not a Bechor Adam, not someone else. Whereas when it comes to other animals, the Bechor has a right to be Makdishit, just like anyone else has the right to be Makdishit. Yocho lo yakdishenu bebeten. You would think that you can't be Makdish the Bechor while it's in utero. Tamal Omar. Hashem Yukar Lashem. Misha Yivukar Lashem. Only once it is a Bechor Lashem. Ki Ata Makdish. Then you can't be Makdishit. Aval Ata Makdish Bebeten. But you do have a right to be Makdishit in utero. Yachol Af Kol Vladei HaKodoshim Kein. You would think that all Kodoshim have this din, that in utero you can determine what the status of the Vlad is. Tamalomar Ach. That's why the pasuk begins with an Ach, which is Chilek. It distinguishes between them. So Alma. From here you would see that Bladei Kodeshim Mimei Iman Hein Kedushin. That the Bladei Kodeshim, based on this drasha of the Torah Kohanim, is Mimei Iman. Because we started out again with Bechor Adam being restricted in being Makdish items. Then we limited that to Bechor Behema. So Bechor Adam can affect the Bechor Behema. But then others could affect the Bechor Behema. And this individual could affect other Hekdeshot. And then we learned from the word Behema that it's all about the Bechor Behema. And that nobody can affect the Kedushata Bechor, whereas you can create Hekdesh for other items. And then it says you would think that maybe that's also true in utero, that you don't have the right to be Makdisha Bechor. Tar says that's only when it's born. So once it's born, because that's when it becomes Kadosh Kedushat Bechorah, and only at that point does it preclude you from your ability to make it into something else besides a Bechor. Before that time, you do have that right. What about other animals of Hekdesh? There you don't have that right. That right's taken away from you because at conception, whatever animal is there takes on the kedusha, the mother. And that is the opposite opinion, which is mimei iman, he ain't kedushin. You have no right to deal with the fetus because the fetus is automatically, from the moment it starts, it becomes kadosh with the kedusha of the mother. Whereas the one who believes v'aviyatanya, hey, that's only manifest when the animal's born. The difference with the nafkamina between them is one, can you do something with the blood in between? Can you be makdish the blood when it's in utero? According to one who says, Rabbi Tanya, hey, the answer is yes. right? The one who says that b'mei iman, they're kedushim, then they've taken on the mother's kedusha already, and there's nothing to do. And the second nafkamina we saw with regards to androgynous and tumtum, if it happens at the time that they are born, that they become kadosh, they're already androgynous and tumtum, and you can't have that kedusha devolve upon them. And then if you say b'mei iman, the kedusha preceded them, and therefore they become kedoshim with a mum in them of androgynous and tumtum. That is different opinions. And now, if you look in Odvav of the Shita Mikubetzet, he brings Gilyon, the Choronira, the Plugta. He believes that there's two machlokot over here. The Uber Yerachimo, Ari, b'makdish behema me'uberet. That the question about whether an Uber is Yerachimo or not is when you're makdish an animal which already has a fetus in utero. Ubisvarahu de plige. And that machloket is a logical argument. That's the machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Bar Podo. Rabbi Yochanan says that you can't separate or segregate away the fetus because Ubar lav Yerachimo, he's not an extension of the mother, and therefore you can segregate him away. Whereas Bar Podo believes that Ubar Yerachimo, and therefore you can't separate or segregate it from the animal. So that's talking about a case where the animal's already pregnant and already has the fetus in utero. And given that, you have the ability to either separate according to Rabbi Yochanan or according to Bar Podo, you can't separate. It's all a logical argument. But then there's a secondary argument here, which is the one we're discussing over here. Ubeplugta de b'mei iman en kedushin ari behekdesha ba'achar kach nitabra. This question of whether it is b'mei iman or behavyatan, that question is in the case where you makdish the mother, and then she becomes pregnant after that. And they learn it out from psukim. This is a machloket in the psukim, that according to the Tana over here that learns it out of achilek, or you're going to learn it out later today's daf, mi'isha v'yela deha. Over there we say that it happens at conception, according to that mandamar. And the mandamar says, v'havyatan yehi, he learns it out of rach kodoshecha asher yulecha. What you learned earlier was teaching you that v'havyatan yehi, that only when they are born. These are two separate machlokot. They're not dependent on each other, and they really focus on different issues. One focuses on being makdish the animal while it has something in utero. That question is the question of Rabbi Yochanan Bar Podo. Can you segregate the vlad, or is the vlad automatically drawn in with the mother? And that's a machloket in Svara. There's another machloket about if the animal is already kadosh and then conceives, when does the kedusha devolve from the mother to the fetus? Is that the moment of conception, or is it at the time of birth? That's a separate machloket. That's a machloket in the psukim. And so Rabbi Yochanan can hold, again, both ways, and Bar Podo could hold both ways, because the two machlokot are separate. They deal with different manifestation. So the Reed points that out, that you have different machlokot here. So Amarle Rav Amram Rav Sheshet. Amarle Bechor, he says about a Bechor, imitziat rubo, when it exits the majority over here we'll assume is the majority of the head, like we learned in Bechorot, that that's what gives it the Kushat Bechor, Ola. So he says that the moment it exits Rov, it's going to be an Ola. The question is, Ola Havi or Bechor Havi? Is that an Ola or a Bechor? At the same moment that it would have come a Bechor, you also articulate beforehand that you, that moment you want it to turn into an Ola. Or in essence, the question is, what is more powerful? Is the Ola more powerful, or is the Bechor more powerful? Do you say, the whole Purta Upurta, the Kanofik Hu Kalil, that every little piece of the animal that exits is something that's Kalil now, takes on the din of an Ola, O Bechor Havi? Or, Tezed a Bechor, the whole Purta Purta Kanofik Bimiltehu, that anything that goes out stays where it's supposed to be, meaning as a Bechor. So is it developing as a Bechor, or is it developing as an Ola? Rashi doesn't seem to have this gear, so you can see that in the Gra, and he doesn't give any perush in Rashi about it. Lishna Achrina, the other Lishna is, Shekenk Dushata Chayla Alei, Odilma Bechor Havi Shekenk Dushata Mirechem. Maybe it is an Ola, because the Dusha devolves upon it, and it is Kalio. Odilma Bechor Havi Shekenk Dushata Mirechem. Or is it maybe the Bechor, because the Bechor has Kedusha Mirechem? And again, the question is, which one of these trumps in this case? They are fighting or competing for the development of the Kedusha on this fetus that is exiting. Which one takes precedence? Is it the one that is Mirechem, which was already something that happens automatically? Or is it the one that you articulated? Because the one you articulated is an Ola, which is Kalil Hashem, versus the Bechor, which is Kodshim Kalim. So each one of them has a strength, and we don't know which one should devolve at that moment. Amarlei, mighty Bailach. So Rav Sheshet says back to Rav Amram, why is it a question? Hainu d'vai Ilfa. This is exactly the question that Ilfa posed. Amar al leket. If a person says about leket, these are items that when they're harvesting, you drop them behind in the field, then the poor people can come and collect them. He says about the leket, in the shirat rubo, when it falls out, the majority of it has fallen out of my hand, yehei hefker. At that moment, it'll become hefker. Leket havi or hefker havi? Does that make it into leket, or does that make it into hefker? Meaning, the moment that it becomes leket is when the majority of it has already fallen out of your hand or out of the bundle that you are holding. That makes it into leket. At that moment, you declare that you want it to become hefker. I mean, you articulate that beforehand, that at that moment, it should become hefker. The Rebbeinu Gershom just adds in the word aretz over here, that b'shash nishiratam ruban la'aretz, that the robe has reached the ground, not just the robe has left your hand, but whatever that trigger or threshold is, that it becomes leket, at that threshold, you say it should become hefker. Leket havi sheken kedushato b'dei shamayim. You say it's leket because that's what God said happens. Or maybe it's hefker because hefker is more generous in the fact that it's open or available to both poor people and rich people, as opposed to leket that's only involving poor people. So it's a greater form of disowning of the property. So which one of those takes the precedence? And Abaye says about that question of ilfa, mighty baile. What's the question here? Divrei Rav, divrei Tami, divrei Mishomim. He says, if you have a choice between listening to God or listening to you, we're going to listen to God. And that's exactly the scenario there by leket. But God says it becomes leket at rov, and you say it becomes hefker at rov. We're going to listen to God, and it's going to become leket, and we're not going to listen to you, and it become a hefker. Hachanami, divrei Mishomim. Say the same thing over here. Hashem says it's going to become a bechor when the rov of the head exits. And you say it was going to become an olah, it's you against God. God wins in that case. God trumps in that case. And therefore, I don't understand your question. That's how Rav Sheshit answers the question of Rav Amram and says that it's clear that it's a bechor and not an olah. So the only time that the olah supersedes the bechor is it gains the kedushat olah before the bechor comes into its kedushah. Because in that way, the olah prevents the kedushat bechor from devolving because it precedes the kedushat bechor. Now, the Baalei Tosafot say that the question was specifically imitziat rubo, that went it out rubo. But if he says imitziat mi'uto, then it's not a question, because then the kedushat olah, where is there really chayo from that moment of the mi'ut, and then the bechor doesn't have any room to be chal afterwards. The achronim discussed, based on the gemara that we saw in Bechorot, the possibility that the kedushat bechor is chal l'mafreya, and therefore maybe the question could exist even b'mi'uto. But that's a little more complex and deals with some of the sugyot that we dealt with in Chulin and in Bechorot. So that's the answer that Rav Sheshit gave to Rav Amram. The next Mishnah. Omer v'ladah shel zo'olah v'hi shlamim. So he says that the fetus that's in utero is an olah and the mother is a shlamim. V'arav kayamim. He's successful. He shlamim v'vladah olah. On the other hand, if he articulates it the other way around, that the mother is a shlamim, and then he says then the vlad's an olah, or is it vlad zivchei shlamim. Then the whole thing is a shlamim, the mother and the fetus are a shlamim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Meir's view, because Rabbi Meir believes tfos lashon rishon. Whatever you say first is binding, and then whatever you say afterwards is a retraction. So here, in the case where you say that the vlad was an olah, then you segregated the vlad up front, and then afterwards you made the mother kedosha bishlamim. So that works, because you took care of the vlad first, because we tfos lashon rishon. Your first statement is taken seriously, and therefore you said this fetus is an olah, that will take seriously. And then afterwards, the mother will be a shlamim. In that case, dvarav kayamim, it works. On the other way around, where he made the mother a shlamim first, and then he wants to segregate out the vlad to be an olah, it's too late. Because he already said that he's shlamim, and when he made the mother a shlamim, the ubar became a shlamim as well. Meaning that at that moment, the dusha devolves upon both the mother and the fetus. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, who believes that a vlad can be separated out, that's only true if you separate it out. But if you don't separate it out, then whenever you're makdish the mother for, that's what the vlad becomes. So in this case, where you're makdish the mother, and you didn't segregate the olah till afterwards in your second statement, then according to Rabbi Meir, tfos lashon rishon, and for that reason, the vlad is also a shlamim. Am Rabbi Yossi, mitkach, mitkain, mitkavein, tchila, ho b'yavshar l'krot shnei shemot kachat, v'rav kayamim. Rabbi Yossi believes that af b'gmar dvarav adam nitpas, a person's whole statement needs to be taken into consideration. So his whole statement over here was that she's a shlamim, the vlad's an olah, and we wait for him to finish his statement. When he finishes his statement, then we look at the whole picture. And over here, it would be binding in both cases. It would be both that in the first language and the second language, since the whole totality of his statement says the same thing in both cases, the mother is a shlamim and the vlad's an olah, it works in both cases to do such, and that's Rabbi Yossi's view. But because it's impossible to say two things at once, and you have to do it sequentially, and so it doesn't matter which way you do it, whether you put the mother first or the vlad first. In either case, the totality of your statement is what we're looking at. If after he already says that the mother is a shlamim, nimlach, he relents, he decides that he's not so sure about that, v'amar v'lada ola, and then he says the v'lada shlamim ola, harizu v'lada shlamim. Then it's too late at that point in time, and the Gemara will discuss what it means that it's too late, or what is the amount of time when it becomes too late. And we're explaining the Gemara here and the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that you have the ability to separate out the ubar, to differentiate the ubar from the animal. And therefore, in that case, you have the right, if at the time that you were Magdish, the mother, you decided to segregate out the ubar, you have the ability to segregate the ubar and make it a different Kedusha, make it Chulin, whatever it is. On the other hand, if you're Magdish it, and then you don't separate away the Kedusha in any way, shape, or form, then that Kedusha will be the same Kedusha as the mother, because we assume that you're Makdish the mother and the Ubar that was there. So both of them become Kedushim in that case. So that's Rabbi Yochanan Shita, that the Ubar can be separated out as an entity. And we say that Bahaviyatan Yehei. So those two things combined tell you that, number one, if it's already pregnant, you have the ability to segregate the Ubar from the mother. And number two is, if the Ubar is conceived, then you still have the ability to deal with the ubar until it is born, because it doesn't take on the kedusha of the mother until it actually comes to fruition, until it's born, not when it's conceived. So that's the reasoning behind this position here and explanation for the Mishnah. Tosafot later on notes that, according to Bar Pada, you'll have to explain this slightly differently, and we'll discuss that when we get there in the Balei HaTosafot. And of course, then anybody who believes Bemei Iman Kedushin would also have to disagree in our Mishnah as well, because then the animals would take on the Kedusha prior to them becoming a Tumtum and Androgynous, as well as prior to your ability to have any impact on the offspring of these animals. Amar Rav Yochanan, Yifrish Chatat Me'uberet Be'alda. If a person segregates out a Chatat, and she's pregnant at the time, Be'alda, and then gives birth, Ratzah Ba'mit Kaper, Ratzah Be'lada Mit Kaper, you have a choice. It was as if you were Makdish two separate Chataot, Le'achrayut, the mother and the daughter, and in this case, both of them have Kedushat Chatat, because Rabbi Yochanan believes, Maitama, Kasav Rabbi Yochanan, Im Shiyaro Mishuyar, that if it is left over the Vlad, you have the ability to segregate it out, because Ubar La Vierachimohu. The Ubar is not seen as an extension of the mother, but rather as a separate entity. This is the Gemara saying what they think Rabbi Yochanan's position is, because we'll see later on that the Rava tries to suggest a different answer as to what Rabbi Yochanan's position is. This is the Gemara saying that this is Rabbi Yochanan's belief, that im shayiro mishuyar, that you have the ability to segregate out the vlad, because the vlad is a separate entity from its mother. Tavle, it's the equivalent of mafrish te chatot achrayut, ratzah mitkaper ba, ratzah mitkaper bechavertas. It's the equivalent of separating out or segregating two animals, lechatat, they are achrayut, they are insurance for each other. In that case, the one that you use goes on the mizbeach, and the other one is yireh ad sheyistaev, and then you monetize it, and then the monies go to Ola, and it is Psulei HaMukdashim. Motiv Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud Muvhak of Rabbi Yochanan. He's a Talmud Chover of Rabbi Yochanan. He asks his Rebbe, Hishlamim Bevlada Ola. Our Mishnah, which says that the mother is Hishlamim, and then the fetus is an Ola, or Zev Vlad Shlamim. Then, according to Rabbi Meir, the offspring is a Shlamim. Visakadatko Shiro Mishuyar. If what you're saying is right, that you can segregate out the fetus from the mother, harizeh v'lad shlamim, why does the Mishnah say that this is a v'lad shlamim, an offspring of a shlamim? Harizo shlamim miboy. It should have said, v'yimitna, it should have said, it is a shlamim, because when you're makdish the mother, you're makdish the mother, and you're makdish the fetus. And both of them are shlamim, but separately, independently, they're shlamim. It's not because it's a v'lad that it is a shlamim, it's because it is a shlamim that it is a shlamim. According to you, Rabbi Yochanan, the language of the Mishnah is not supportive of your contention or your position at all. Because if you were right, then when you're Magdish the Shlamim, it should say that the Magdish the Shlamim, and then afterwards it said Vlad Ola, according to Rimeir, which has no bearing, then the mother is a Shlamim and the fetus is a Shlamim, but separately. It's not a Vlad Shlamim. It's not an offspring of Shlamim. It's a Shlamim and a Shlamim. Just like you say by the Chatat, that it's a Chatat and a Chatat. We don't say it's a Vlad Chatat. So the Gemara says, Amar Rab Tavler Barmina Dahahit. Don't worry about this Mishnah. This Mishnah is actually problematic for Rabbi Yochanan, but don't pay heed to it, because Hamar Rav, the Tano, that Rav said to the Tano, was saying over the Mishnayot before Rav, Tnei, you should amend this Mishnah to read Harizo Shlamim, that this is a Shlamim and not a Vlad Shlamim. And so then with the emendation of Rav, then the Mishnah would be supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's contention. So you're right, the Mishnah as it's written is a problem for Rabbi Yochanan, but don't worry so much about it, or don't let this bother you, because we have another version of this Mishnah in which it says Harizu Shlamim, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan is going to subscribe to. The Gemara says, Meitabek, Homer l'shifchato, Hariat shifcha, v'vladech ben chorin. The master says to the maidservant, you are going to remain a shifcha, but the fetus that you have in utero is going to be freed. It might tell me, Uberet, if she's already pregnant at that time, zachtalo. She's able to, on his behalf, take possession of the get shichrur and free him. Right, this is based on the position in the Gemara Gittin, that gito v'yado ba'im kachat, that you have the ability to take possession of the get shichrur at the moment that you become free. So, for instance, in a regular situation in which a master frees his slave, everything the slave owns or takes into possession belongs to his master. So it's circular. If he hands in the get shichrur, then the get shichrur belongs to the master, and he never acquires himself. So we have this view in the Gemara Gittin, the gito v'yado ba'in ke'achat. Simultaneously, when he receives the get, then he also takes possession. He frees himself and gains possession of it simultaneously, and therefore he is able to then take possession of the get and free himself when he receives the get from his master. So that's the classic case of gito v'yado ba'in ke'achat. Over here, you have a slightly different situation in which the shifcha remains a maidservant, and the fetus is now being released based on the fact that the shifcha has taken the get shichrur on his behalf. Does that work? Can the shifcha take the get shichrur on behalf of the fetus? And that's what the Gemara clears over here. If you believe, don't like hold like Rabbi Yochanan, that the fetus is not seen as a separate entity, ubar yerachimo, and the fetus is an extension of the mother, part and parcel of the mother, shimhachi zachtolo. That's why she is successful at acquiring on behalf of the fetus, behavilei kimishachrer chatzi avdo, the equivalent of freeing half the slave. Mani, and who would be the author of this position? Rabbi. It's a machloket Rabbi in the Chachamim, in the Gemara in Kiddushin, and it would be Rabbi hi kiditanya, like we have in the Braita, hamishachrer chatzi avdo, someone who frees half his eved, gets out of cheirut, gito v'yado ba'im kachat. That's the view of Rabbi, that not only does this din of gito v'yado ba'im kachat apply when you free the entire slave, it also applies when you free half the slave. So you free half the slave, you have that principle of gito v'yado ba'im kachat, and the slave succeeds at releasing half of himself from the master, and now he'll be a half eved, and half eved kenani, half ben chorin, because he's successful at doing that. So if you explain Breita that we just brought, according to Rabbi, and we say that the fetus is part and parcel of the mother, then you've created a similar situation, which is now you've created a mother-fetus, which is one entity, and now you've freed half the entity, which is the fetus. So when the mother accepts the get shichur, we can say, kita v'yada v'im kechad, or really it's for the, she's acting on behalf of the fetus, so that part of her, that half of her, now is released, because get shichur and the yad become simultaneously. That works well. But according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, it says that the fetus is a totally separate entity, Yamart Shiuro Mishuyar, like you want to say, Ubar Lab Yerachimahu, and the fetus is not an extension of the mother, Amai Zachtolo. Then why is she successful at freeing the fetus? Vahatanya, because we have a Braita near it, it seems. Sha'evet Zochel Kabel Get Shechur Shel Chaveiro Miad Rabo Shenu Shelo, Velo Miad Rabo Shelo. An Eved Kenani has the capacity to accept a get shichrur on behalf of a fellow Eved Kenani when he's owned by a different owner. In that way, the get shichrur is now being accepted on behalf of that Eved Kenani by another Eved Kenani. That other Eved Kenani who's owned by a different owner, in essence, even though he takes possession of it, it goes to his owner, but that's still separate possession. That separate possession is Zochen Shadam Shalom Bifanav. That schut then releases the Eved Kenani on the other end who belongs to the other master. On the other hand, if the two Avadim belong to the same master, then it doesn't work. Because then you have that circular logic that I said before, which is that the master gives the get shichur for Eved A to Eved B. When Eved B accepts it, it goes back to the master himself, because he acts on behalf of the master. He is a vehicle for the master acquiring it. So when he gives it to Eved B, it just comes back to him. Now, had he given it to Eved A, it would have worked, because we have the principle of Yado v'Gito Ba'im Kechat. That only applies when you give it to the Eved you're trying to free himself. But you give it to another Eved of yours, that doesn't work. And there it doesn't free him. So that would be the similar scenario here, according to Rabbi Yochanan. If Rabbi Yochanan believes that the Shifcha and the Ubar are separate entities, they're both avadim to the single master. And then when he hands the get shichur to the mother, then it's as if a second evid of his is accepting a get shichur on behalf of another evid, the fetus. And it doesn't work. And so according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, this is really problematic. And that's what the Gemara concludes. But to Yufta, the Rabbi Yochanan, to Yufta, is a strong refutation of Rabbi Yochanan's position. The Gemara is going to say now, it's not so bad, because Tanayehi, it is a machloket Tanaim, maybe this issue of Sheyer Mishuyar, and given that it's a machloket Tanaim, Rabbi Yochanan has a Tana that he can rest his position on, and therefore it's not a complete rejection or a refutation of Rabbi Yochanan's position, but it's still a big difficulty for Rabbi Yochanan. The Shita Mekubetzet over here in Otei brings from the Re that why doesn't the Gemara suggest that Rabbi Yochanan's following the Tana Rabbi Eliezer's position, which we saw in the past. He says that if you're Makdish a Nekeva for Korban HaPesach and it has a Vlad in utero, then the Vlad in utero is a kosher Korban HaPesach. So he clearly believes that you can segregate between the mother and the fetus, and the fetus becomes a kosher Korban HaPesach. In that instance, it's a separate entity completely. It's not a extension of the mother's Kedusha. So why don't we just say Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Eliezer? So over here, the Re in the Shita Mekubetzet distinguishes between the case of Pesach and the case of here. In the case of Pesach, maybe Rabbi Eliezer believes that the fetus is independent because the mother can't attain Kedushat. The Kedushat of Pesach on the mother never reaches Kedushat of Pesach because she is a female. So then, by definition, that's when Rabbi Eliezer says maybe you can segregate out the fetus because that's the one that is Ra'oi. That male fetus is Ra'oi to be a Korban Pesach, and that's why it works over there. But in a case where the Kedushat of the mother would have worked, and you're now saying that I want to segregate away the Vlad, maybe Rabbi Eliezer wouldn't agree in that case. And that's why Rabbi Eliezer can't be the source for Rabbi Yochanan's position, because you could distinguish between Korban HaPesach, where the Kedushah and the mother is not Re'uya, and therefore the Vlad is separate, versus other Kodashim, where the Kedushah is equally valid on the mother as it is on the Vlad. Maybe there Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you can't separate away the Vlad. So we have to find somebody else that's supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position. That's what we have here, the Tanya. Omer l'shifchato, hariat bat chorin. If he says to his shifcha, you are a free woman, bivladeich evet, but your fetus remains with me. Vlada kemoha, tivri Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Her Vlad is like her, Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, and just like she goes free, so does the Vlad go free. Chameim omreim, varav kayamim. Whatever the master said works. Now, the Brayta then brings, mishom, shenema isha v'yelada tiela adonah, that when you free the Eved Ivri, who is married to a Shifcha Kananit, the Eved Ivri goes free, but the Shifcha Kananit and the children stay with the master. So there's some correlation between the children and the maidservant, because it's her and the children. Where it says, Kra mai talmuda the Rabbanan. According to the Rabbanan, what is the Pasuk doing? The Pasuk sounds much more like Rabbi Yossi Galili than it sounds like the Rabbanan. It's saying that the Isha and the Adab have the same din. And the Rabbanan are saying just the opposite. They have a different din. So Amarava, the Rava says that you made a mistake here, that Haikra, the Rabbi Yossi Galili, the Tani Vlada Kamoa, that the Mishum is not referencing to the Chamim's position, but referencing back to Rabbi Yossi Aglili's position. Mishum Shenamar, Haisha, Biladea, Tiyad Adunah, Zman Shaisha, Ladunah, Vlada Ladunah. When the mother belongs to the master, then her offspring also belong to the master. As opposed to the case where the mother's going free, like here, then the children go free as well, or the fetus goes free as well. Mailav, Vahaika Miflagay, this is what they're arguing about. Rabbi Yossi, Savar, Shiaro, Enu Mishuyar. That you can't leave something over. And therefore, if you freed the mother, you also freed the fetus along with it. There's a single entity. It's a ubar, it's a yerachimo. So the mother's freed, so is the ubar. Abundance, avi mishuyar. That you have the ability to segregate them. You can free the mother, and the fetus can remain as an eved kenani. Amalacha Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, no. The kuliyama shiurei mishuyar. Everybody agrees with me that shiur mishuyar. Bahacha hainu taima. I'll explain to you the reason over here is, it's a gzera takatuf. Anywhere else, the ubar would be a separate entity. Over here, the pasuk tells you there's a gzera takatuf that the isha bilada, the woman and her fetus have the same din. But that's a gzera takatuf, a unique case by shifcha kananit, but it's not applicable anywhere else outside of that. So in general, both Rabbi Yossi Galili and the Chachamim b'Eiliv shayar mishuyar, this is the one exception where Rabbi Yossi Galili has a gzera takatuf that doesn't apply here. Ella Vade lema kihani tonight. Okay, maybe it's not like those tanaim that it's a machloket, but let's say it's like these tanaim that it should be a machloket. Tanya shochet et ha'chatat umatzah ba ben dalit chai. You shecht ha'chatat And then after it's shechted, you find a fetus that's alive, walks off, comes out of the mother, and is totally healthy. That is 4 months in gestation. Speaking about a behemoth daka, behemoth daka's full gestation is 5 months. 4 months would be something where it's developed far enough that it could survive, but it hasn't reached full gestation. If it reaches full gestation and you shecht the mother, then there's the machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether the shechita of the mother is matir the child. On the other hand, when it's less than full gestation, everybody agrees that the shechita of the mother is matir the child. This is a case of ben pakua. So that's the case here, that this ben pakua has a din that it's already been shechted. Question is, what's the status of this fetus that walked out of its mother? Tani chada, ein echelet el zichrei kuna, ein echelet el yom velayla echad, ein echelet el lifnim min haklayim. So one version in the Braita says that it has all the dinim or trappings of a chatat, that it's only eaten by the zichrei kuna, it's only eaten for 1 day and 1 night, and it's only eaten inside the azara, which are all the dinim that you would find by a chatat. The tani idach, another Braita says, nechelet l'chol adam, can be eaten by anyone, nechelet b'chol makom, anywhere, nechelet olam, at any time. Which basically means that it is chulin. My love, tenaye. Maybe this is exactly what we're looking for, a machloket tanaim about shayer mishuyar. The Tanakama savar, shiyaro enu mishuyar. The Tanakama believes that if you leave it over, it doesn't work. And therefore, the fetus here takes on the kedusha of the mother. And just like the mother is a chatat, so too is the fetus a chatat. Umasavar shiro mishuyar. And the other one holds that it is able to be left over. That's why it's chulin, because you're able to segregate it out. Just because the mother is kadosh b'kedushat chatat doesn't mean that the offspring is kadosh b'kedushat chatat. The Balei HaTosafot point out here the great deficit in this explanation of the Gemara, and that if you say it is she'er mishuyar, then if you're makdish the mother, that kedusha should devolve upon the fetus, just it would be a separate entity. Nobody says that the fetus remains chulin when you're makdish the mother. You can leave out the fetus. You can make it chulin if you stipulate that. But in a case where you just makdish the mother, the fetus would follow the mother, and it also would be kadosh, because shat chatat. So how can you claim here that the second Tana that says that the fetus is chulin believes sheyer mishuyar? Therefore, the Tosafot says that the girso of Rashi, which is the exact opposite of the girso of our Gemara, is the correct girso over here. And Rashi explains that according to the Tanakama, who says that it is a chatat, the ubar, he believes im shiyor mishuyar. He believes that whatever's left over is left over, and therefore when you're magdish the animal, the kedusha devolves upon the mother and the fetus simultaneously, and they're both chataot, independently, because you are magdish bepeh, both item. And that's why when you shecht it and you find it live inside, that is also has the din of kedusha. On the other hand, the Tana Batra, who says that it's chulin, believes im shiyaro eino mishuyar. It is not left over. Well, now that it's not left over, it gets its kedusha from its mother. When it gets its kedusha from its mother, then we know there are two opinions as how the kedusha is transferred from the mother to the fetus. And that is either the bemei iman kedushin, that immediately the kedusha devolves from the mother onto the fetus. That's at the point of conception. Or in this case, at the point that you're makdish the mother. Or behavyatan in kedushin. At the moment that they are born, that's when the kedusha devolves. And so just like a animal that was kadosh and conceived, the animal doesn't gain the kedusha from the mother until it's born, so too over here, the fetus will not gain the kedusha until it is born. Now the problem with that is that Rashi already said on the Mishnah that when you're speaking about bemei iman and havyatan, that's only talking about an animal that was kadosh and then conceived. When you're speaking about sheyar, mishuyar, or any mishuyar, that's speaking about an animal that's already pregnant. So now it seems to me that we're conflating the issues, because we're saying that it's a case of im shayar inu mishuyar, which indicates that the animal is already present. The fetus is in utero. And yet we're saying that b'aviyatan yek doshin is having an impact on this fetus becoming kadosh. And so Rashi finesses around that by saying that this kedusha here is like other vladot kodoshim. And therefore, the kedusha devolves like as if it was a conception, as if the fetus was conceived after the animal was already kadosh. Tosafot takes that to a different level, and Tosafot asks the same question, and then explains it, both to explain the shita of Bar Poda, which is what we're speaking about here, sheyor enu mishuyar. And he says that Bar Poda's shita is dependent on Me'iman and Bar Yatan Yehei, but in a unique way. obviously, if it's b'mei iman in kedushin, it's very easy for Bar Poda to explain why the fetus in utero is kadosh, because Bar Poda says that fetus is not separate, it's a yerech imo, and given that, if the mother is kadosh, then the offspring is also kadosh, because at the moment of conception it happened. The problem for Bar Poda is the case of b'havyatanya hei, in the case where the kedusha only devolves when it's born. If that's the case, according to Bar Poda, why can't you change the kedusha of the ubar? Why can't you do anything to the ubar? Bar Poda says the ubar is the same as its mother. But if you believe that the kedusha only devolves upon the fetus when it's born, then why don't you have the ability, first of all, to remain chulin beforehand? And why isn't it? Why aren't you able then to be makdish it or do whatever you want with it? Because it never reaches kedusha until it's born. The Baal Tosafot come up with this in-between formulation for Bar Poda, and the way we're explaining this Tana Batra, you would have to say that from the moment that you are makdish the animal, that moment there is a kedusha that devolves upon the fetus, but it's in abeyance until it's born. That means it has strong enough kedusha that you can't change the animal's kedusha now. If you were to shecht it and it came out and it was never born, then in Ochanami it would be chulin. But in its current state, it has enough kedusha to block you from changing the kedusha of that fetus or doing anything with the kedusha of that fetus. It will only attain that kedusha, or that kedusha will only devolve once it's born, because it's held in abeyance until the time of birth. So Tosafot does that in order to explain, have Bar Poda be able to explain all the different views over here, including subscribing to this idea that b'havyatan yehei, and yet you're still not allowed to change the kedusha of the animal, even though it's b'havyatan yehei, because of the fact that there is this kedusha that is a blocking kedusha that happens from the mother that is passed down to the fetus, even though there's a delayed implementation of that kedusha to the point that it's born. Amarcha Rabbi Yochanan. Now, you don't have to say that. The kuliyama im sheiro mishuyar. If it was left over, it is left over. Bahane tanae, bahakam iflege. This is the machlok between them. Marsa v'bladei kodoshim behavyatanein kodoshim. One of them holds that the blood kodoshim only become kadosh when they are born. Marsa v'bladei kodoshim behavyatanein kodoshim. Then the other one holds that the Vlad Kodashim become Kadosh from the time of conception. The Braita that says that the Vlad is Kadosh B'Kedusha V'Chatat, they believe that it happens B'mei Iman. That means from the moment of conception, the Vlad already takes on Kedushat Chatat, and then when you shechted it and then it walked out, you have another Chatat that just walked out, because it is a continuation of the Kedusha of the mother. On the other hand, the Braita that says that it is Chulin is because they believe that the Vlad Chatat only gains its Kedusha when it's born. And over here, it never was born. Since it was never born, it never attained the Kedusha. So when it walks out of the mother, it's Chulin because there was nothing that was Makdishit. The mother was a Chatat, and the fetus never accepted the Kedusha. So obviously, the case here is a case where the individual was Makdish the Chatat, and then afterwards, it became pregnant. So now that it became pregnant afterwards, at conception, was there kedusha? One Braita says yes. The other Braita says no. And then when the animal comes out, after the mother shechted, doesn't reach full gestation, then it's never b'havyatan, it was never born. And so, according to Me'iman, there was kedusha. According to one b'havyatan, it never reached the point of kedusha. That's the view of Rabbi Yochanan in explaining this machloket here, to say everybody holds im sheyer mishuyar. Just a question or a machloket about whether it's Me'iman or Rabiatan ain kedushin. Fibaitem alokasha kan beshikdisha ulusop nitabra, kan beshinitabra ulusop ikdisha. Or the other way to explain it is, depends on what was the situation with the ubar. In the case shikdisha ulusop nitabra, everybody holds, number one, that sheyer mishiyar, and everybody holds behabiatan ain kedushin. So the case where it's kulin is the case where you're makdish the mother, and only afterwards did it conceive. That means that the ubar never gained kedusha, because it was the conception makes no difference, and it was never born. So therefore, it never gains any kedusha. On the other hand, it's the case where it was already pregnant when you were makdishit. In that case, it devolves upon both animals. Even according to Rabbi Yochanan, if you don't separate away the fetus from the mother, it attains the same kedusha as the mother, because when you say it's kadosh, the mother, you also mean that the fetus is kadosh. There might be separate entities, but they're both kadoshim, kedushat chatat. And that's why it's kadosh b'kedushat chatat. Now, obviously the havamina here was that the animal was pregnant at the time that you were makdishit, and the question was, im shiyar mishiyar or not. That was the havamina, that the machloket between the tanaim was, we were makdish an animal that was already pregnant, and then we want to know, is the fetus kadosh b'chatat or not kadosh b'chatat? And that would depend on whether you say shiyar mishiyar or not. That was the havamina as to what the machloket was between the tanaim. B'yochanan rejects that, either by saying everybody's speaking about a case where it wasn't already pregnant. And the question is, what is the threshold for making a kadosh? Is it conception or birth? The other one is that that's exactly the difference between the brayot is whether the animal was already pregnant or became pregnant. And we can explain it. Everybody holds the habitane and kadoshin. It's a question of what was the status of the fetus when you were makdish it. Was it already there? And therefore you're makdish it as well. Or was it not there yet? And then it didn't become kadosh because b'habiyatani kadosh, and it came out without ever being born. And so therefore it never attains the kedusha of the mother. Right now, matzkif lo Rava. Rava asks, me might the time of the Rabbi Yochanan, how do you know Rabbi Yochanan's reasoning is im sheyer mishuyar? That if you leave it over, then you can segregate it out or leave it over. Until mahayno time of the Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe this is the reasoning of Rabbi Yochanan. He believes that you can attain kapara through the bonuses of hektesh. So over here, hektesh has a bonus here because the animal's pregnant. And so therefore, hektesh has extra appreciated value to it because not only was the animal now kadosh, but there's a fetus inside of it. And Rabbi Yochanan might believe that you have the ability to use shvach hektesh for your own benefit. And maybe that's why Rabbi Yochanan believes that both the mother and the fetus are considered to be chatot, and the separate chatot, because that shvach hekdesh, that additional appreciated value or extra value for hekdesh, you can utilize for your own benefit. So Amar Leih Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna answers Rava and says, that's not a plausible answer. Rabbi Elazar tamedi de Rabbi Yochanan. I pointed this out when the original question was asked to Rabbi Yochanan, that it was Rabbi Elazar posing the question. He was a tamed of Rabbi Yochanan, and he questioned Rabbi Yochanan from our Mishnah, and said, how can you say Sheyer Mishuyar? Our Mishnah disproves that. Yotiv Lekameh Rabbi Yochanan, and he was sitting in front of Yochanan and posed the question. The question wasn't an esoteric question where he asked it outside the context of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar was asking Rabbi Yochanan a question. It was a direct question to Rabbi Yochanan. And now Rabbi Yochanan had the option to answer him. Had he believed like you, Rava, that his position was based on Shvach Hekdesh and not about Sheyer Mishuyar, he had a very easy answer. He could have said, he's sitting in front of Yochanan, Lohadalei, Hashinuya. He didn't answer him like you would have suggested. According to you, you could separate Rabbi Yochanan's position from the Mishnah by saying, Rabbi Yochanan's position is about Shvach Hekdesh, and the Mishnah is talking about Sheyer Mishuyar, and they don't cross paths. And so that's why the Mishnah is not a question of Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara, Rabbi Nuna is pointing out that Rabbi Yochanan got the question from Rabbi Elazar, and he didn't answer that way. The fact that he didn't answer the way shows you that's not what he believes. He believes that it's Sheyer Mishuyar, and the Mishnah was a strong question against him, and that's why you have to deal with it. Otherwise, he should have answered Rabbi Elazar on the spot and said, you got it wrong. You're misunderstanding me. The fact that he didn't say that means that Rabbi Elazar understood him properly, and that means that Rabbi Yochanan believes that the reason when you're mafrish chatat, that is pregnant, that you have two chatot, is because Sheyer Mishuyar ubar lav yerchi moho, not like you're saying, Rava atamar, time of the Rabbi Yochanan, mishum danar mitkaper b'shvach hektesh. If the reason is because you can be mitkaper b'shvach hektesh, that's not the reasoning of Rabbi Yochanan. And now the Gemara goes to that last line in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, imish amar is shlamim nimlach, if he said it was a shlamim, and then he recants on that, or he wants to change his mind and make the fetus into an olah, then it remains a shlamim. So the Gemara is a pshita. What's the question? Vladan shlamim. It's clear that the vlad or the offspring is a shlamim. El koimet to buy mimlach? You want the option to relent on your position forever? Why should you have an open-ended opportunity to change your mind with regards to the fetus? That doesn't make any sense. So, of course, that's what he's saying over here. And why do I need Rabbi Yossi Aglili to tell me that information? Amar Papa lo nitzracha ela, we only need it shamar b'toch de gibur. He said the recanting or his relenting on his position, he did it in a toch de dibur. Maldutema, I would have thought toch de dibur ki dibur dami. I would have thought toch de dibur is as if it's one dibur. We already saw that Rabbi Yossi Aglili believes even with the completion of his sentence, a person is bound. So if that's the case here, if you say, then it remains as a single statement. And the reason that he took a small pause was to think about exactly what he wanted to do. It wasn't that he was relenting on what he said before, or that he was trying to reverse what he said before. He was simply just clarifying what it was. It took him a second to clarify it. That's tokadei dibur kadibur dami. And you would have thought that was good enough to make it one statement. The Kamash Malan is that it's not. It's not one statement, and Tokadei Dibur doesn't work in Kodashim, according to Rabbi Yossi HaGilili. And that presents a very difficult problem because of the Gemara in Baba Kama. The Gemara in Baba Kama says that there is Tokadei Dibur with regards to Kodashim, and the Gemara itself over there deals with that stira and says there are two types of Tokadei Dibur. There's Tokadei Dibur, which is Shelat Shalom of a Talmud to a Rav, and then Shelat Shalom from a Rav to a Talmud. When a Rav says hi to his Talmud, he says Shalom Alecha. When a Talmud says hi to his Rav, he says Shalom Alecha Rabbi, or the other version according to Rambam, Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. So we call there's a long Tochadei Dibor and a short Kedochadei Dibor. And the way the Gemara in Baba Kama deals with it, it says that in Kodashim, the short Kedei Dibor is considered to be a single statement. The long Kedei Dibor is not considered to be a single statement, it's considered to be two statements. Our Gemara here makes no such distinction. Our Gemara says, Kamash Malan, Tochadei Dibor doesn't apply at all. If you look in the Balei Tosafot, he already raises that issue and he says, wait, what about the Gemara in Baba Kama? And therefore he says over here, that this case over here, Sotev Dibor, is Perish Kedei Shelech Shom Tami the Rav. He says, which is the one that doesn't work over here? It's the one of the Talmud to the Rav. The longer Tochadei Dibor doesn't work by Kodeshim, but the shorter one does. Basically, Balei Tosafot are qualifying the statement of the Gemara here to match it up and to have it reconcile with the Gemara in Baba Kama. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom over here says that it's a separate Gemara, and the Gemara argues over here and says that no Tochadei Dibor works at all over here. Now, why Tochadei Dibor is given to you? We've seen this before when we discussed it in the Gemara. There are different reasons given, either because it gives you the opportunity when you're engaged in a business transaction to do the proper thing, which is to turn away and greet your Rebbe, or turn away and greet your Talmud. So we allow you that opportunity to do that mitzvah without it upending whatever transaction, whatever you're engaged in. That's one possible way to explain it. The other way to explain it is that there's no meaning to Tochadei Dibor. It was a siman, not the sibah. It's a way to measure amount of time, but in and of itself has no meaning in terms of the measurement of time. Those are two basic ways to explain what Tochadei Dibor is over here. And there's a machloket over here as to whether the Tochadei Dibor here means no Tochadei Dibor at all, or is it similar to Gemara in Baba Kama, which says that the longer Tochadei Dibor doesn't apply by Kodeshim, but the shorter one does make it into a single entity. What's even more interesting is Rashi is goreis this pshita over here. If you look in the Shita Mekubetzet, you look in the Gra, over here, they all say that this does not belong over here, but belongs after the next Mishnah that we're going to read. That's where this Peshitta belongs. It doesn't belong on the Mishnah that we read before, but rather on this subsequent Mishnah. And they move this Gemara over to Chavav Amud Bet. So now the Mishnah says, Arei zu tmurat olah, tmurat shlamim. Person says that this is both a tmurat olah and tmurat shlamim. Maybe even he says, Arei zu tmurat olah vit tmurat shlamim. Arei zu tmurat olah, tivir Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, tfos lashon rishon. Your first statement is binding, and therefore this is an olah. Amar Rabbi Yossi, in the Kach, the Kane Nitzkaveina, that's what his intent was, Tchila, from the outset, and Hovi Afshali quote, Bet Shemot Kachat, so that you can't say both of them simultaneously, Dvarav Kayamim, Apid Dvarav Adam Nitpas, and we look at his whole sentence, and he wants to make it both, Tmarat Olah, Tmarat Shlamim, obviously they have to both be present there, so he can transfer the Kedusha over to them, and therefore, it would be that both of it, it's both a Tmarat Olah and a Tmarat Shlamim. Im Shemar Amar Tmurat Olah Nimlach V'Amar Tmurat Shlamim Harizu Tmurat Olah. If he said Tmurat Olah and then relented and said that it's Tmurat Shlamim, then it's a Tmurat Olah because he waited too long. It's considered to be a separate statement, and you can't reverse your statement after you've already waited. This last line of the Mishnah is what the other Mefarshim say that the Gemara Pshita was written on, not on our Mishnah, but on this one over here. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Chaf Hei Amud Bet.